Good morning, church. We're going to jump right into Psalm 13. And we just saw the words on the screen there. That's the text for today as we walk this this journey together through the Psalms throughout the summer. Thanks for sticking with us. And here we go, Psalm 13. It's a lament. It's a cry from David. David is tired. He's tired of waiting. And in the midst of waiting, David has grown impatient. And the truth is when you're tired of waiting, when you've grown impatient, your mind starts to race. And that's exactly what's happened to David here. He doesn't know why he's waiting. And in the midst of not knowing why he's waiting, he's got some questions, really questions for God. He's asked God, have you forgotten about me? He's asked God, why are you hiding from me? And these had to be troubling thoughts for David, one who had a close relationship with God, and now he's hearing voices in his own mind that are calling out for his attention. And his waiting had been amplified, as we just heard in the passage, his waiting's been amplified by a physical illness. We believe from this passage that David is sick. Something has attacked his body, and he's feeling pain. He describes it as having felt pain all day and all night. And the truth is we don't know how long this pain had gone on. We don't know if he's been suffering for 3 days or for 3 years. But we know that his patience for God, his patience with God, has run out in the midst of this very painful period. His patience for God has run out, and he's tired of waiting. And there's one other little caveat that he throws in here, is this idea that not only is he tired of waiting on God, but in the midst of all the pain that he's experiencing and the sorrow in his heart and in his mind, he feels like his own enemy is now starting to gloat over him. His enemy is starting to rise over him. And so David does perhaps what you and I would do in a time of impatient waiting. He starts to ask God to move. He asks God to move and act on his behalf. He wants to know how much longer before God moves. And I read this passage, and kind of in a humorous way, one of the things that came to my mind was a video that went viral years ago of the little kid who had gone into the dentist, had to get some stitches in his mouth, and by the time he gets back in the car, his dad was filming him. Many of you have seen this. And the kid is just asking the question, you know, why do you have four eyes, Dad? And can I touch my teeth? Do I have stitches? And you can tell he's a little drowsy from whatever it was they put him under with. And in the video, there's this cute moment, but that speaks to a father's concern for his son. When the son just looks up in the front seat and he asks his dad, he says, "Is it going to be like this forever? Seeing double, not feeling right in my heart or in my mind, being confused, being in pain. Is it going to be like this forever?" And immediately, the dad says, "No, it's not going to be like this forever. You're going to get better." And then I was struck by the question that the kid asked, a very honest question, is it going to be like this forever? But then the quickness with which the dad responded, as he responded in a way perhaps dads should respond, quick, to the point, with assurance, with love, with confidence that his son was going to be okay. When we get into Psalm 13, David asks four times, "How long, O Lord?" And he walks this journey through the first couple of verses. "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever?" David feels forgotten. "How long, O Lord? How long will you hide your face from me?" As if God is playing some cosmic game of hide and seek, and he doesn't want to look David's way. He doesn't want David to look his way. "How long, Lord, must I wrestle with my thoughts and have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy rise up over me?" David asks four times in two verses, "How long, how long, how long, how long, O Lord?" Perhaps you've called out that same prayer at some point in your life. You know, David thought he was going to die. He thought he was going to die, so he prayed this prayer, "Lighten my eyes," or "give light to my eyes, so that I will not sleep in death. Open my eyes," he says to God, "so that I don't die." He's calling out to this God who seems to be distant, who seems to be far off, who seems to have forgotten about David and his plight. And he says, "Open my eyes, I'm about to die here." How difficult it must be to live in a never ending pain. Have you ever experienced a season or a circumstance in which you believed it was never going to end? Friends, have you ever gone through a situation, a circumstance, a relationship that had gone down the tubes and you thought things would never get better? Maybe you're out there this morning and you've had seasons, real seasons like David, where you thought you were going to die. You know, it's one thing to think, how long, O Lord, is it going to be like this forever? Will I feel your distance forever? Will it seem like you have forgotten me forever? How long, O Lord, will I have sorrow in my heart and troubled thoughts in my mind? Will this be forever? It's one thing to have those thoughts, but it's another thing to have those thoughts and in the midst of those questions only get silence back from God. And in David's case here in Psalm 13, he's not only getting silence back from God, he's hearing the voice of his enemy. His enemy starting to rise above him, starting to rise over him, starting to mock him. And in the midst of the mockery that he's receiving from his enemy, his own thoughts are wayward. His own thoughts are starting to depress him and suppress him and keep him down so that his heart and his mind aren't clear. How long, O Lord? You know, there's no way we could visit an exhaustive list this morning. But I wonder, center point, have you ever questioned God about his timing? Has your patience with God ever run out? Maybe some of these today would resonate with you or your story or your past or maybe even where you're living today. How long, O Lord, will I suffer this illness? How long will my family member, my friend, suffer this illness? How long will this relationship be going in the wrong direction? Lord, how long will I have to fight the voices in my mind that tell me I'm not enough? Oh Lord, how long will I live in regret? Oh Lord, how long will I live in hurt or betrayal because someone that I loved and trusted turned their back on me? Oh Lord, how long will I experience sorrow in my heart? How long until I want to live again? Lord, how long until my circumstances change? Lord, how long until you change me? Oh, Lord, how long? Will you forget me forever? So David, he makes a request of God. He says, God, look on me. God, answer me. I don't know if I've been forgotten. I don't know if you're hiding from me. I don't know why my mind is so troubled and my heart is so hurt. I don't know why it appears that you take the side of the enemy, even through my plight. How long will this go on, God? You have shown your face to me before. You have loved me in the past. I've experienced your goodness. I've experienced your mercy. How long now, O Lord? And the truth is, friends, I wonder, have we ever wondered, why do we have to call on God to get God's attention? Like, honest question, self-disclosure this morning. Church, why do we have to call on God to get God's attention? You know, turning attention towards someone, isn't that what gods do? Like, don't gods turn their attention towards their people? Don't kings consider the plight of their people and give them their regard? Don't fathers turn to their son and say, it's not going to be like this forever. Things are going to get better. Why do we have to, at times in our lives, ask God to look our way? Maybe that's our own impatience. Maybe that's our own frustration with God. Maybe when we hear the silence of God and we hear the voice of the enemy in the midst of the silence of God, we feel like we have to call on God, beckon God, say to God, wake up, turn our way, turn your attention towards us. I don't know why we feel that way, but the truth is we do. We call on God. We beckon God to look our way. You know, this past weekend, many of you, and thanks if you did it, many of you filled out a survey for our reopen team. And at the end of the survey, I simply asked the question, how can we pray for you? And I got to tell you, overwhelmingly, the majority of requests were for health, for safety in these days, as we experience these uncertain times as a society, for the Lord to come to our aid, for the Lord to give us peace For family realities, for financial realities. Those were very, very common responses to the prayer request. Lord, protect us. God, bring us peace. God, bring us health. God, sustain our health. God, look after us physically. Look over our finances or be with our job situation. Those were very common responses. And the truth is it's not uncommon, though, for physical pain to lead us to mental anguish. We see that with David right here. When something that's happened to us physically starts to play in our mind, it starts to play in our heart, it's not uncommon for physical pain to lead to mental anguish. And it's not uncommon for mental anguish to lead us to believe that the enemy is winning. And friends, it seems like the enemy is winning more so in the midst of the silence of God than when God is moving and he's active and he's speaking. So David cries out. I hope you hear this song. I hope you hear this call, this lament of David. David cries out, God, look my way. God, I don't want to die. Not to sickness, not at the hands of my enemy. God, for me to die, and I love this idea, but God, for me to die, it would weaken your case. In fact, David says, if I died, I would hear my enemy rise above me as if to say, you were weak, oh God. So show yourself. David calls out, show yourself to me. Show yourself to my world by healing me, by opening up my eyes, by answering me, by looking my way. Will you increase your case, oh God, to the world by healing me? And then something happens. Boom, split second. Split second in the verse. We don't know how long it was in real life. We just know that something happens between verses 4 and 5. And for us, it's a split second because it's just as quick as if we're reading through the verses. Here's what he says in verse 4. And my enemies will say, I've overcome him. My foes will rejoice when I fall. Verse 5. But I trust in your unfailing love. In a split second, it's like David comes to his senses. Has he overreacted? Has he dramatized his position or his plight? Has he overstated his case to God about how he feels, about where he lives? As a concept within counseling, I personally discovered the brain puke about 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I entered into a relationship with an individual to walk alongside me as a pastor, as a husband, as a dad, as a person. And he introduced the brain puke to me. And he used an example from David's life to talk about the brain puke. He described the brain puke as our opportunity when we have so much going on in our head and in our heart, and it's full of emotion that we need to get it out on paper before we can actually sit and talk to the individual or address the circumstance or the relationship. And the way he posed it to me was, he says, Dwayne, do your brain puke. Whatever's going on in your heart and your mind, get it out on paper. Get your emotion out on paper so that you can get your emotion on paper so that by the time you sit down to have the conversation with the family member or the friend or the enemy or whatever the conversation is going to look like, you can have conversation about the facts of what's going on and not simply be driven by emotion. We see a brain puke here for 4 verses from David. It's David raw, flared up. One of the best images that I received from one of the scholars I was reading this week was they described Psalm 13 as a big wave in the ocean. Man, we see it coming. David's questioning how long. We see that thing rising. Have you forgotten me? The wave's getting bigger. Will it be like this forever? Why am I troubled in my heart and my mind? And then the wave come crashing down. He says, and it's like David's saying as this wave crashes down, if you don't heal me, I'm going to die. Is that what you want for your servant? You want your servant to die so your enemy can gloat over you? So the world will think you're lesser of a God, and this wave crashes in. And the writer says, just as soon as a wave on the ocean crashes in and it subsides as it reaches sand, he says, so there's a turning in David's heart and mind here in Psalm 13. And so we see in David this big flare up, and then it's almost like he comes back down to earth only to say to God, and I want you to hear it like this morning, only to say to God, God, who am I kidding? I mean, who am I kidding? I trust in your mercy. You know, I'm asking you where you are. I'm asking you how long. I feel I've been impatient. Maybe I've been rude, but the truth is I celebrate your salvation. Even in the midst of feeling forgotten and ignored and betrayed, I'm going to sing of your praise because you have been good to me. God, you've been so good to me in the past that I'm going to trust you for the future. And that's where Psalm 13 ends. It's a very short psalm. It's just 6 verses. This big flare-up, how long, oh Lord, will you turn your back forever? Will you forget me forever? If you don't save me, I'm going to die. Wait a second. I've seen your grace and your love move before. I know how you've worked in my past. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sing of your praise. And that's where the psalm ends. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. Church, this is a perfect example of an Old Testament lament. An opportunity to cry out to God, lay it all on the line, and then allow the Holy Spirit to come in and bring us back down to earth to realize that we can trust in a good, gracious, loving God. So I want to ask you today, Center Point, where are you today? What are you doing? In the midst of walking through life, do you find yourself at times trying to get God's attention? Lord, if you just look my way, man, if the Lord would look my way, he'd see what I'm going through and he would move and he would act. And I wonder if that previous list resonates with you at all. Lord, how long in the midst of illness? How long in the midst of relationship? How long in the midst of fear or pain or depression? How long in the midst of hurt will you move again? And so we see in this Old Testament example from David's life, the writer saying, where are you, God? God, what are you doing? Why aren't you doing what I want you to do? Why aren't you doing, God, what I need you to do? In the end, you probably will. So it's all good. I know you're going to help me, and so I'm going to sing. That's what we see from David. But what about when God doesn't do what we want him to do? Center Point, I love the way Psalm 13 ends, this positive hope, confidence. I'm going to sing of God's goodness. But what about when God doesn't do or respond or act the way we want God to? We see that when we jump into the prayer life of Jesus in Luke 22. I want to couple this morning the words of David in Psalm 13 with the prayer that Jesus prayed in Luke 22. Now, here's what happens. By the time we find Jesus in Luke 22, he's already been betrayed by Judas, one of his disciples. By the time we find Jesus in Luke 22, he's already told Peter, his closest companion and confidant, that he's going to deny him 3 times before sunrise. By the time we find Jesus in Luke 22, his disciples have already told him, we've got swords for the incoming battle. No doubt that made Jesus feel like maybe they haven't even gotten his message. Maybe they haven't even heard what Jesus has been teaching all along. And so this is before the betrayal. This is before the beatings. This is before disciples fleeing. This is before the cross. We find this in Luke 22, verse 42. Here's what it says. It says, Jesus prays, Father, if you are willing, don't fathers want to give good gifts to their children? Son, it's not going to be like this forever. You're not going to be under anesthesia forever. You're going to go back to normal. Don't fathers want to give good gifts to their children? And Jesus prays, Father, if you're willing, take this cup. What cup, Dwayne? Well, the cup of betrayal. The cup of suffering, the cup of death. Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me. And here's where Jesus switches on us. This is where he flips the script. He says, not my will, however, but yours be done. So Jesus, in his own lament, to the point that he is praying, he is sweating, he is calling out to his Father, Father, this is what I want. God, this is what I would will if I were in charge, but I don't want what I will, I want what you will. Father, if you'll give me this gift, this is what I would have you do for me. Isn't that what fathers do? Don't they give good gifts to those they love? yet not what I want. Father, what you want. That was Jesus' moment of clarity in the midst of the raw emotion. Father, this is what I want. If I had it my way, if I could write the script, if I were in charge, I would let this cup pass from me. This is how I feel. But in that moment of clarity, Jesus says, oh, I can't go on what I feel. I have to go on what you will. And I know your will, oh God, is perfect. You know, in the midst of the prayer requests that we received this week, and we received a lot of prayer requests, prayers for peace and safety and financial stability, for health and continued health. There were some other prayers, though, where individuals were calling out to God, saying, God, let me get your attention. God, will you hear this cry? And in the midst of going through some of the prayer requests this week from the survey, my heart goes out to the one who's praying as they're seeking God's will, because we understand from the life of Jesus that sometimes God's will is not our will. And what do we do as people when we realize that the path God has for us is the one we would not have chosen? I'm seeking spiritual growth. Growth is a difficult, painful reality. And friends, today, if you're seeking spiritual growth, like you're truly trying to draw closer to Jesus, there's a cutting away of attitudes and behavior and history that's going to go with that. Who you were is not who God is calling you to be. And if you're seeking to grow in Him, there's going to be some forks in the road that you have to take, not because you will, but because He wills. There's some that are seeking wisdom to communicate with unbelievers. What an incredible call to God. God, look on me in this plight. I'm trying to extend your love to those who do not know you and those who have not heard you. God, look my way. There are those who are seeking their hearts to be better aligned to the love of Jesus Christ. That's an acknowledgement that perhaps my life has not been aligned. Maybe my life has been misaligned. Maybe my life has been skewed, and I want to come in alignment with Jesus in such a way that I can love my neighbor. I can love the other. I can love the hurting. I can love the misunderstood. I can love the oppressed and the marginalized with the love of Christ. That will be a painful process for you as you admit that the things and the ways of this world are passing and fleeting, and we need to embrace Jesus. There's this prayer, I want to walk by faith and not by sight. Friends, that's a dangerous prayer. Lord, help me to walk according to my trust in you, not on what I can see. Is there any area in your life today that you might need to say to the Lord, I want to walk based on trust, not based on what I see. Based on trust, not based on what I know. Based on trust, not on my portfolio or my bank account or my rigging or my scheming or my planning. Based simply on trust in you. I want to live my life in a way that exemplifies trust in you, not based on me and my wisdom. Not my will, but yours be done. And it's here that we see in the life and in the death and the resurrection of Jesus, we see something about the heart of God. The heart of God is other-centered. It desires obedience. The heart of God is other-centered, and it desires obedience. Not my will. Father, not my will, but yours be done. I was so struck by this idea. In Psalm 13, I want you to hear the personal pronouns that grow out of David's lament. David is concerned about David, truly. One of our ancestors, we look to him, but we see in this brain puke what the mind can do to us when we're not in a good place. Hear the personal pronouns just from this very short psalm as David cries out to God, God, me, me, my, me, my, my, I, my, me. Personal pronouns, personal possessive pronouns, focused on self. And David, he kinda ends there. Maybe in an unhealthy place, maybe in a place seeking growth, he kinda lands there when he says, God, I'm gonna trust you because I know you're gonna do what's right by me. So I'm gonna sing, and David sings. But we see something different in the life of Jesus. Jesus doesn't sing. Jesus simply announces that he will obey what the will of God is, and he continues to pray. So Jesus says, not my will, but yours be done. And then we see the act of obedience that Jesus took as he left the garden and he went to pursue the passion and the suffering that he came for. Even Jesus in those moments of life saying, this is what I want. This is what I would desire. Father, if you would give me what I want, this is what I would take, but here's what I'll do in this time. I'll obey you. I'll obey you because I want your will for my life and I want your grace and your goodness for the other. Who's the other? I'm the other. Friends, you're the other. You're the one that Jesus came to give his life as a ransom for so that you might know the grace and the goodness of God. So I don't know where you are today in terms of your patience or your impatience with God in the midst of calling out and crying out to God. Today we see in the life of Jesus one who knew what he wanted, one who could embrace his idea, his own safety, his own well-being, or who could follow the will of the Father into suffering and pain and death. And friends, he followed the will of the Father. So may we today, from Psalm 13, from Luke 22, may we be reminded of a God who looks on us, not simply for our plight, but looks on us with his reality at work, his plan at work, and he wants to lead us into that. Friends, may we grow out of simply a me, my, I way of life and begin to move towards embracing the way that Jesus painted for us. Father, not what I want, but your will be done in my life, in my family, in my body, in my career, in my church, in my community. We want what you want, oh God.